Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. You know, according to the FCC, there are certain things that you can do and you can't do when you broadcast over the airwaves in America. Yeah, I mean, they kind of have a you can do this and a you can't do this list. And the big thing is, if it's not on the you can't do this list, it's probably fine. But one of the things the FCC likes to monitor is they like to monitor the use of words as those words are provided across the airways. Now, there's a big collection of words that are a big no-no for somebody like me to say on the air. Now, you probably know what most of those words are. Some of you older people could probably refer back to a comedy routine that a comedian who's passed on did back, I think he did it back in the 70s or the 80s, probably the 60s, I don't know, George Carlin. He talked about the seven words. So some of you guys are going, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And some of you are going, what are you talking about? Well, the biggest thing that we can't do is we really just can't use profanity. Profanity is a big taboo. You just don't do it. People don't want to hear it. You know, if you want to hear it, go to the movies or go to a cable news show or something like that. Every once in a while, they'll allow you to do that sort of stuff. But in the world that I operate in, profanity is a big no-no. Now, in the real estate world, there are certain terms that are used which might seem to be profane. Well, you know, I don't even know if that's the right use of the word. But there are certain words that are used in the real estate context, which when we as real estate investors, or maybe just as homeowners, hear certain words, we cringe. We cringe and we wonder, why can you say that word over the air? That should be part of the banned list. Well, the one word that strikes me as, you know, we shouldn't say it in the real estate world, but it's not on the banned list, is foreclosure. Yeah, that's the dirty word. It's kind of a bad word, especially when you are in the process of foreclosure. Foreclosure is not a comfortable place to be in. Basically, what it means is that you have violated the terms of whatever relationships you have with regards to mortgages that you have on a property, and you're unable to meet your obligations. I was going to say monthly obligations, but my obli got in the way. It's a bad place. And as real estate investors, we never want to be there. As a homeowner, you never want to be there. Now, fortunately for me, I have never faced foreclosure. But I've known people who have faced foreclosure. And foreclosure is just a bad place to be in. You know, there's a lot of talk out there with regards to what's going to happen in the real estate markets when Congress finally decides that whatever stopgaps that they have in place, and when the president decides whatever stopgaps he has put in place expire, what happens? What happens to the foreclosure rates? Well, I'll tell you, I was reading an article that was published by the NBC affiliate in Dallas-Fort Worth. They published this on their website. It was written by a gentleman by the name of Evan Anderson. It's a little dated, but it caught my attention. And let me just read you the forecast or the forecast, the headline. Good grief, it must be Monday. I can't get my words straight. So it's the headline reads like this: grim foreclosure predictions for 2021, what you can do now. And what they're addressing in this particular article is primarily homeowners, people that own properties as their principal residences, and the fact that they may be under some form of protection right now because of the coronavirus event. You know, it's very clear to state that there are a lot of people in our country that have been negatively affected by the coronavirus. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know it, I know it. And one of the unfortunate effects of the coronavirus is that it has prevented some people from being able to earn income. And they need that income because that income stream allows them to pay their mortgage. But the byline on this article says anywhere from 225,000 to 500,000 homeowners across the country could face possible foreclosure throughout the rest of 2021 because of, get this, delinquent loan payments. That's right. There are people that are unable to make their mortgage payments right now. And because of protections put in place by our government, if you have a loan that is backed by Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae, it's basically a government-backed loan, you are probably in a place where you have protections in place and that there's a moratorium on federal foreclosures, meaning that your lender can't come after you. They can't start foreclosure filings. But what happens when these protections go away? What happens if Congress and the president can't get together and agree on what a good path forward for America looks like, especially for the homeowner? Well, I think what happens is that you have lenders that realize there's a violation in the loan terms, and they may start down the road of foreclosures. Now, foreclosures can be a very bad thing, but they can be a good thing too, especially for the real estate investor. When we come back, we're going to talk about that right after this.
Del Wamsley explains how he found that speck of light that got him into the lifestyle.
I had a guy that used to come into the health club every day and work out for 4 hours a day, sit in the jacuzzi, swim, play racquetball, was happy, looked great, tan all the time. And one day I just asked him, what do you do for a living? And he said, Del, I own real estate.
Well, do you own real estate? Register for our live online free workshop and find out how you can get all the things you want out of life with passive income. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Brought to you by Lifestyles Unlimited.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Back to the show. So on today's show, we're talking about foreclosure. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think foreclosure is kind of a dirty word. I really do, you know. But what I'm also hoping is that the FCC doesn't fine me $50,000 per iteration for using that dirty word. It's not on their list, but I think it should be, because I think foreclosure is a process that people go through, which can be very devastating for them, whether you own your own property and you live in it, or whether you're an investor and maybe you're incorrectly invested in properties. If you can't meet your obligations to your lender, the lender has a recourse. The lender has the potential to start foreclosure proceedings on the property, which basically means they're going to take you to court and they're going to litigate to remove you from the property so that they can take the property under their own control, and then they can dispose of the property as they see fit, as real estate owned. And well, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's kind of how foreclosure works. In this article from the NBC network in Dallas-Fort Worth, written by, let me get this gentleman's name right correctly here, Evan Anderson. This was published a couple months ago, but you know, I think the points made in this article are relevant. And what it's going to cause me to do is, once I get through talking about foreclosure and what the potential is for foreclosure maybe in the next year, what I want to talk about is a process that you need to go through if you want to take advantage of the fact that there are potentially foreclosed properties available to you in the marketplace. Now, there are people that would say, oh, you're mean-spirited. You would take advantage of somebody who is foreclosed upon. Well, you know, don't make me feel bad, because that's not what I'm doing. As a real estate investor, I'm investing in properties that have the potential to provide me cash flow, that have the potential to provide me appreciation, that have the ability to provide me principal pay down, that allow me to potentially capture additional equity in the property. And it also gives me tax advantages with regards to the fact that the IRS allows me to depreciate the improvements on that property, and I can use that depreciation to offset the income streams that I receive. And as a result, I pay probably the lowest taxes amongst any for-profit group in the United States. And foreclosure properties are just something that exists in the marketplace. I didn't cause them to go there. I didn't encourage anybody to be foreclosed upon. But as a real estate investor, it gives me opportunity to maybe pick up an additional asset, to repurpose that asset, and then potentially put that asset back into the marketplace and provide it as clean, functional workforce housing for a family that deserves it. Yeah, that's the way I look at it. But let's take a look at what a Dallas real estate attorney said. This lady's name is Rachel Kerala. I probably just butchered her name, and I apologize, Rachel. I did a little checking on her, and she's a trial lawyer, and she specializes in helping people through the foreclosure process. She's got about 14 years of experience in doing this, and I'm not promoting her. I'm not saying you need to contact her if you're in foreclosure or anything like that. I'm just pointing out that she has information to provide on this topic. And one of the things that she said was that she's not really seeing any foreclosures at the time this article was published, which was about a month and a half ago. She says that partially because the president has put a moratorium on federal foreclosures, those are any foreclosures that are backed by Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae, and also the various forms of financial assistance through unemployment has kept homeowners afloat. But she goes on to say that prediction will potentially dramatically change in 2021, and many of those financial benefits, or in some cases band-aids, they might end. According to an analysis by a data solutions firm called Atom, it has two T's in it, the number of cases somewhere in the foreclosure process would shoot up by more than 100% from the current levels of about 145,000 to roughly 336,000. And that was just projected for the second quarter of 2021. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, roughly, 6 to 9 months from now. Getting back to Rachel, she says, for Texas, for example, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw anywhere from a 100% increase in where the foreclosures were this year versus where they will be next year. In other words, I would not be surprised if we saw between 100,000 and 200,000 foreclosures in Texas within the next year. She went on to say this. She said, then across the country in states such as Florida and California, where the home prices are generally higher, it's not going to be unusual to see a, get this, 300% increase. Yeah, so, you know, what this article is telling me as a real estate investor is that I need to be prepared to look for properties that may be coming through the foreclosure pipeline. Yeah, it's very important as a real estate investor to understand where my sources of potential properties are. These are properties that I want to identify. These are properties that I want to evaluate. These are properties that, based on that analysis, I may want to purchase. And foreclosures, to be honest with you, have an ability to provide pretty decent properties at pretty decent prices. Now, why is that, you wonder? You're probably saying to yourself, how is that? How does that happen? Well, here's the way it was explained to me. When a lender goes in and they foreclose on a property, they wind up taking that property as what's called real estate owned. And when it goes on to the lender's balance sheet, it actually goes on as a liability, not an asset, because the loan for them, when it existed on that property, was an asset. But that asset goes away and it gets replaced by real estate, which they have no business nor any desire to operate. So what they choose to do is to liquidate that property, and they're willing to liquidate that property and hopefully recover at least what they had invested in the loan that existed on the property. But in cases, they may take a lower amount because in their world, it is a business decision. It's a liability for them to hold on to that property. When we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about the things that you need to take into consideration if you're going to go down this path.
Listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. So I'm using a dirty word today. Well, it's a dirty word in my vocabulary, and what I'm praying is that the FCC won't fine me $50,000 for saying this word over the air, but here it is. Are you ready? Foreclosure. Yeah. I think, you know, foreclosure is a terrible thing because it has the ability to harm people. But it's also a good thing. And it's going to be difficult for me to get my words out with regards to the good thing about foreclosure. I mean, from the business mechanics perspective, on the lending side, you got to remember, when you bring a lender into a real estate transaction with you, that lender is putting up a big chunk of money. I mean, you know, if you're putting 50% down, that lender's still coming in with half the money. If you're putting 30% down, that lender is still coming in with 70% of the money. And, you know, it is permissible to get a 20% down loan with an 80% loan to value rating. In other words, that lender is going to come in with 80% of the money that you need to acquire a property. Now, whether you choose to live in that property or you choose to turn that property into income producing property, that lender still has a stake in the game. And if the individual who is teamed up with that lender, who is partnered with that lender essentially, is unable to create the streams of money that need to flow through, in other words, to pay the darn mortgage on that property, it puts the lender in a financial state of disrepair. It puts them in a situation where they're going, wait a minute, we had a deal here, and you know, you were either supposed to live there and go work for money, and then when that money came in, you paid your mortgage, or if you're an investor, you were supposed to find a great resident for that property. You were supposed to operate that property correctly, and with the income streams coming in provided by that resident, you would in turn make that mortgage payment. So foreclosure is a process that allows the lender to essentially cure a defect that occurs if somebody fails to meet their obligations to that loan. Now, there's a third element of foreclosure that has to do with the marketability of assets. And that's where we as real estate investors, we come in to play. Because when we are gainfully and actively looking for property, one of the places that might provide us potential properties to consider is the foreclosure channels. Now, what I want to talk about is some of the things that I think you need to do. Some of you have already done this stuff. So if you've done all this stuff, kick back, relax, just hang out with me and just kind of giggle and grin. We'll have a good time together. But some of you haven't done any of these things, or you've done some of these things. So what I'm pointing out is that there may be a potential for us as investors to see the pipeline from foreclosures increasing. And as such, we have to be ready to act. We have to be ready to acquire those assets if we're in the acquisition mode, and we have to be knowledgeable about what we're doing. So the first thing you have to do is educate yourself. That's it. I mean, you've got to educate yourself. You must know what you don't know before you go investing in a property. You know, one of the things that you need to do is research the markets that you're interested in. And if you haven't already done so, join a local investor group. And the reason you join that local investor group is so that you have the ability to network with other like-minded individuals that can provide you insight, they can provide you experience, they can provide you knowledge, they can provide you, I don't know, you know, maybe somebody to bounce an idea off of. And the other thing you must do is you must learn the process inside and out before you put your money to work for you. So in other words, what I'm getting at is if you have never purchased residential income producing properties before, it's a different animal than buying the house that you live in. It is, because you have to look at that home as a business unit. You have to look at that home as the ability to provide streams of income for your portfolio. So you kind of have to retool your brain a little bit. The other thing that you have to do is you have to figure out how to locate the properties. Now, I'll be honest with you. Not every good deal out there shows up on the multiple listing service. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at my inbox right now, and it's just kind of blowing up. It's really been blowing up over the last couple of weeks, because what I have done is I have cultivated relationships with, well, I'll just give you the number, at least 20 different real estate agents. And the reason I have done that is because I want to give myself the best chance of locating the best properties in the areas that I'm interested in investing in. You know, when you take a step back and you think about it, if you try and do this alone, you're going to be doing this alone. And that doesn't work. It really doesn't work. What you have to do is you have to build a team. And part of that team is having qualified real estate professionals on that team, because not a single realtor has access to all the potential deals that are out there. I mean, just to give you an example, I got an email today from one of the realtors that I've cultivated. And basically what he sent me was a list of multiple properties that are owned by an investor who is looking to liquidate the holdings. And these properties are not on the multiple listing service. He has basically an exclusive right to market the properties, but he's not putting it into the multiple listing service because for whatever reasons they're not doing it. The bottom line is that one guy has access to those properties. Nobody else does. The other 19 people that I have on that team, they don't have access to those properties. And that's okay, because those other 19 people, they have access to properties that one guy doesn't have access to. Yeah, it's very important that when you're reaching out to find these qualified real estate professionals, that you find the people that are actually engaged in doing the business of transacting real estate, putting buyers and sellers together, orchestrating the transactional component of the deal on your behalf. Yeah. I mean, there's kind of an unwritten rule in the real estate agent world, and it's this. 20% of the realtors out there do 80% of the business. That's right. The other 80% of the realtors that are out there, well, they do 20% of the business. And I mean, that's just the way it works in the real estate field. So what you're looking for is the go-getters, the people that are out there doing business. And when you tell them what you are looking to do, when you translate what you're trying to accomplish to them and give them parameters for what you're looking to buy, your inbox starts blowing up. Hey, when we come back from the break, I'm going to get into some of those other things I think you need to do to be ready for the foreclosure potential landfall.
One of the things I'd like to get across is that your whole life you wanted to make a change, right? But you've never had the time? This might be it, because we have online education that you can get involved in.
We're now going to bring the free workshop to the entire country and really the world. Anybody who is interested can participate in that. We're going to live stream that free workshop and have people online with you on the live stream, talking with you, answering questions, interacting. You're really going to get a great feel for the lifestyles community from this. And you can register for that. So if you want to find out about us, this is a great way to take a look at us and what we do.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. That's lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
So we're talking about foreclosure, and we're talking about the things that you need to do to be prepared in the event foreclosure properties start to inundate the marketplace. Now, foreclosures really aren't happening right now. There are some foreclosures that are occurring. There are some lending entities that, you know, don't offer money linked to government-backed mortgages. So as a result of that, I'm 99% confident that they can still proceed in the foreclosure process. But then again, it also depends on local rules and guidelines, because maybe some courts aren't entertaining that. I mean, it's just kind of a big mess. But once this thing eventually sorts itself out, once coronavirus gets under control and we resume whatever normal life looks like, foreclosures are potentially going to become Well, they're going to become a fixture. They're going to come out of the shadows, and they're going to happen. And as a result of that, properties will potentially come on the market. And these are properties that you potentially can acquire. So what I'm trying to tell you are some of the things that you need to do now to be prepared if you want to take advantage of the fact that the foreclosure pipeline may be opening up. And in the last segment, I mentioned that you really need to go out and cultivate a team of 20 qualified real estate agents, people that are out there doing the business of transacting real estate. And you need to let them know what your parameters are. I mentioned that I got an email this morning from one of those realtors where he sent me a package of single family homes. And the reason he did that is because I'm in the middle of doing a 1031 exchange. I've sold two properties. I actually have a third one that's due to close next week, and I'm going to take those three properties and lump them together, and then I'm going to invest in replacement properties. So the email that came in was in direct response to the parameters that I put out with regards to what I'm trying to do. So in that particular case, it was single family homes. But you know, I'm also considering maybe a fourplex or something else. So what I'm looking for is for those agents that I have relationships with to essentially scour that market for me and give me things that they think are going to become those great replacement properties for me. And it's no different if you're preparing for foreclosures. It isn't. Once you've established those relationships, you maintain those relationships. The other thing that you need to have is you need to have a mentor. You really need to have somebody that you can pick up the phone and contact and say, look, talk me off the ledge here. This is what I'm doing. This is what I am trying to accomplish. What are the pitfalls that, you know, I might be walking into? What are some of the things I haven't considered? And a mentor is somebody that can provide those answers. They're also that person that basically can put their arm around your shoulder and just say, hey, you know what? This is going to be okay, man. Everything that you're doing correctly. You need a team. And those are just some of the teammates that I think you need. But I think you also need a general contractor, because some of those foreclosure properties that you decide to acquire, they may not be in good shape. Not everything that the banks take back are in pristine condition. Some are. Some are not. So you have to consider whether or not a property you would potentially look at would require some kind of rehab. And I'll tell you what, having a good general contractor that is well-versed in doing rehabs in the marketplaces that you're looking for and looking in is absolutely important. Now, there's other trades that you may want to have on your team. You know, you really just need to sit down and think about, what relationships do I need to foster? That's really what building your team is all about. So let's say you get this team all built. You've got your real estate agents out there. You've got somebody who's going to mentor you. You've built a team. You know, you've got maybe a CPA on that team. You've got a lawyer on that team. You've got a general contractor on the team. Maybe you've got somebody that does foundation work. Maybe you've got a roofing person. Maybe you have, who knows? It's your team. You build it as you see fit. So you're going to start evaluating properties. Those realtors are going to start sending you information. Some of the properties they send you will be on the multiple listing service. Some of those properties will not be on the multiple listing service. Maybe they're what's called whisper deals. In other words, that real estate agent may have created a relationship with somebody who wants to sell, but who isn't necessarily interested in putting the property on the multiple listing service. Or maybe that agent makes a exclusive deal with a bank to market those properties that bank takes back as real estate owned. I mean, it really doesn't matter, you know, where they come from. But the key thing is this: evaluate the property. evaluate every property. Look at what the property is worth in the marketplace, all fixed up. What is the value? What are comparable sales for that property in that neighborhood for homes that are all fixed up? Because, you know, you may get a property that is already fixed up. You may get a property that's not already fixed up, which actually takes me back to some members of the team that I think you need to have, and it's your lenders. You need to have a relationship with a conventional lender, and you should have a relationship with a hard money lender, because it's using those sources of capital that are going to make this process a little bit easier for you. And it's going to allow you to leverage the properties so that you can use the least amount of money necessary to get the deal done, which usually translates into better returns for you. So make sure you're doing a good analysis on the property, and also look at the rents. You need at least one good rent comp. Yeah, you need to know what that size of property in that kind of neighborhood has the potential to rent for, because that all goes in to your analysis. And once you've done that evaluation and you think, okay, this property looks like it's going to be a good fit for me, you want to negotiate. You want to make an offer that works for not only you, but also for the seller. And if it's a foreclosure property, then that seller is probably some type of bank or lending institution. Now, one of the things you might want to keep in the back of your mind is to maybe aim for a price point that is 20% less than the property's current market value after rehabbing. Okay? But let me be very clear with you. Even though that may be a consideration for you, don't try and hold out for the perfect deal. No, just don't do it, okay? Because you're better off purchasing several properties at very good prices than waiting to purchase one property that's a home run. I mean, just an awesome deal. And once you're done negotiating, and by the way, that real estate agent that you cultivated that is working with you on this is going to help you with the negotiation process, you're going to get that property under contract, okay? And if you're smart and you're able to, you're going to try and get an option on that property so that you can do an inspection of the property. You really want to know what's going on with that property. And that option period gives you that opportunity to look at the property, evaluate that property, get maybe a member of your team called a home inspector in that property, and you get a full workup of what that property is doing. And if everything looks like it's going right, then you're going to close on that deal, and you're going to close as expeditiously, as reasonably as possible. Okay, you're not going to drag things out. You're going to get that property closed, and your lenders are going to help you do that. Your real estate agent is going to help you do that. They're going to get you through that escrow process. And once you get the property, well, then it's a matter of, do you have a rehab phase to go through or not? Maybe you got a property that was already in pretty good condition, doesn't need any work. In either case, whether you rehab it or you don't rehab it, what you need to do is find a great resident for that property and make sure you're screening your potential residents correctly, effectively, and in accordance with all laws. And when you find that great resident, you get that 1-year lease signed and you get that resident to move into the home. Now, the last two components are really kind of easy. The first one is ongoing management, making sure that the income is coming in on a monthly basis and you're making all associated payments with regards to the expenses on that property. And then, to be honest with you, the best part is this. Once you've taken that rent payment and you've made the associated payments with regards to maybe the mortgage, or maybe you've got a property manager, another member of your team that's assisting you with this property, what's left over, it's called cash flow. And that cash flow, that's pretty awesome stuff, because you can do whatever you want with that money. You can go out to dinner, you can hold it and build it up for maybe your next property. It's a good problem. But at the end of the day, just be prepared if foreclosures happen to materialize and be ready to pounce. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.